Hagman and Hagman Report, addressing issues you're not going to find being addressed on Fox News, certainly not on MSNBC, ABC, CBS.
Well, at least not the way they're presented there.
That's right. You know, we're looking at so many headlines, so much news. How do you deal with it all when there's this onslaught? Well, certainly you triage the news. You know, you got to know what's important, obviously. And you know, we have right now the secret takeover of police. We've got the temporary stay, this amnesty for these illegals in this country by the Department of Homeland Security. He's got no business, even has got no authority to do so. And now you've got Obama dancing for several minutes, dodging, of course, on whether Iran is going to use that $400 million to fund terrorism. But wait a minute. Wait a minute. We don't pay ransom for hostages. Nah.
All right, let's go back to January 17th. Now, there was revelations that a plane carrying $400 million in cash arrived in Iran as the Islamic regime released U.S. hostages. Prove that President Obama engaged in a cash-for-hostage deal, congressional Republicans charged Wednesday. There is a detailed report on the Wall Street Journal that reignited a months-old debate about the Iranian nuclear deal. This report makes plain what the administration can no longer deny. This was a ransom payment to Iran for U.S. hostages. That from Republican Tom Cotton, a senator from Arkansas, said in a letter to the State and Justice Departments, Iran sent American hostages back the same day it received the cash. Sounds a lot like a ransom payment to me, House Majority Leader Kevin McCarthy, a Republican out of California, said. And House Speaker Paul Ryan, while hedging his criticism by noting that the newspaper report was unconfirmed, said the report would also mark another chapter in the ongoing saga of misleading the American people to sell this dangerous nuclear deal. Now, today, Obama, we do not pay ransom, Obama declares, calling the criticism of Iran deal illogical. President Obama said Thursday that it defies logic that a $400 million payment to Iran in January could be considered a ransom for hostages. The State Department announced the payment on January 17th, the day after the Tehran freed four Americans, and on the same weekend that the UN sanctions on Iran were lifted. The State Department has said the payment was part of a settlement of a decade-long legal dispute before an international tribunal in The Hague, and that the timing was coincidental. We announced these payments in January many months ago. They weren't a secret, and this wasn't some nefarious deal, Obama said at a news conference after a meeting at the Pentagon with Vice President Joe Biden and members of his cabinet and other military commanders, including the National Security Council. In fact, he said, lawyers had advised him that there was a significant litigation risk and we could end up losing billions of dollars. To drive home the point, Obama declared, we do not pay ransom for hostages, saying Republican accusations otherwise made no sense. The notion that we would start now and even announce it to the world, even as we're looking into the faces of other families whose loved ones are suffering, defies logic, he said. I have a question.
Valerie Jarrett,
what about
benefits?
Releasing the Guantanamo Bay prisoners for a return of American personnel? That happened under his watch.
And you know, it's not
new. We were in Montana coming home when
that
happened.
That's right. And it's not new under Obama. Bush has done it. Bush, George H.W. has done it. Jimmy Carter, to a lesser extent. You've got to get back early on in his administration. And even back in the Nixon era. Now, this is not all with Iran or Middle East countries. These are various countries. But this is not just exclusive to Obama. Now, is this a big deal? Yeah, it's a big deal. Because this when you look at the infiltration, the Islamic infiltration into the administration, from Valerie Jarrett to the Department of Homeland Security to every department, you can see what's taking place here. America has lost its ability to lead, basically we've surrendered. And tomorrow night, by the way, folks, we're going to be with Steve Quayle. Steve Quayle is going to be on the last 2 hours of the show talking about this and other facts with respect to the Russian situation, the civil war, and the world war that's looming over our heads. I just want to bring that out in the context of this.
And the ISIS, you know, there's a document dated August 2016 obtained by NBC News shows that ISIS has established fully operational bases in 18 countries, triple the number from just 2 years ago.
And what you're not hearing, the conspiracy of silence is the title of our program tonight. You're not going to hear the effectiveness of ISIS. You're not going to hear how ISIS has infiltrated every state in the United States. You're not going to hear about how ISIS is also affecting, massaging, and influencing the Nation of Islam. Yes, I know how strange that sounds. Or the various other groups that are sympathetic to Islam itself. You're not going to hear about the 90% of the mosques that are being financed by, 90% of the mosques here in the United States financed by either Saudi Arabia being the primary or Turkey being the secondary source of financing, along with the nations of Qatar, other Middle Eastern nations. You're not going to hear about the 2,000 active investigations about ISIS. By the feds.
Now there is between the United States and Russia. Obama today, when he was speaking about Iran, switched gears about Syria and about how he was going to continue to drop bombs on ISIS. The United States last week voiced its deep concern about Russia's announcement that corridors would be opened where Syrian opposition fighters could lay down their arms in exchange for amnesty, and where civilians could leave the ravaged city of Aleppo. Russians called the operation a large-scale humanitarian operation, but the State Department said it appeared to be a surrender demand and a move to empty Aleppo of civilians. "I'm not confident we can trust the Russians and Vladimir Putin," Obama acknowledged Thursday, "but we have to try because the end result is perpetuation of civil war." Shifting to what he called the real threat, the Zika virus, Obama called on Americans to pressure Congress to approve funding requested by health officials to fight the mosquito-borne virus. So what started as 7 minutes of dodging questions about a $400 million ransom payment that broke U.S. laws when it comes to currency and the shipping of that currency to the what he called the real threat, Zika virus. I mean, he's talking about ISIS. And then he says the real threat, the Zika virus.
Well, yeah. Once more, we're looking at diversion, this diversionary tactic away from the threat that we face right now. And folks, any Western country, and especially in America, I just really want to reaffirm that our research has verified that the various encampments, the various paramilitary training compounds here in the United States, whether it be the Muslims of the Americas, which is the Jamaat al-Fukra, formerly designated terrorist group, now taken off that list, or whether it's various factions of the Nation of Islam or the Black Panthers, the New Black Panthers, you've got this thread that's being woven within all of these groups that is, in fact, it's something called Muhammadism, okay? And I would urge everyone to really understand that. Tom Horn and Chris Putnam talks about that ideology. And this is what ISIS really is all about. It's extremely important. And also, it's behind the so-called refugee resettlement, the Hijra to America, which is really a jihad. It's a form of jihad. So when we see the 8,000 Syrians being granted here illegally, Muslims, 8,000. Well, it's going
to
be
U.S. poised to hit Obama's target of 10,000 refugees,
and that's probably low by half
by September,
right? But what we're saying here is the influx, and I look straight to Barack Hussein Obama at this, as well as his puppets such as Jay Johnson from DHS and Comey, as well as Lynch, and previous to that Holder, and then you've got John O'Brien. But what we're seeing through this is the hijra of Muslims into America. This is a jihad tactic that is explained in great detail through the documents that have been secured, discovered, obtained in raids all across the Middle East. How do you take over a country? You do so by the numbers. So understand Hijra, H-I-J-R-A. The refugee resettlement is a form of jihad. And jihad is not, as they want you to believe, this spiritual struggle, as the Department of Education is pushing, as the various government entities are pushing. Jihad is, in fact, a very real act of war. And really, there are so many great reference materials on this. I can't name them all, but also hand in hand with this influx, Joe, of the 8,000, 10,000, 100,000 non-Mexicans or non-Europeans, but Muslims into this country. You have concurrent with this the push for Sharia, and this is where the DNC, I think, stumbled, because the father of that fallen soldier that they touted and exploited, Mr. Khan, he was an immigration lawyer. And I got a lot of emails. We Joe, you and I got a lot of emails at the studio saying, well, you should get into Khan's background. Of course. Khan is a stooge.
He was,
in
paid,
my view.
From what I gathered, he was paid $25,000 to give the speech at the DNC. There were people who wrote the speech for him. Apparently, the Constitution was purchased 2 hours before his speech.
Interesting.
No, that's unconfirmed. I've only had one source that I found. But it's been, we talked about it earlier this week, he has come out and said that the Constitution must always be subordinate to Sharia. And that's all you need to know right there?
Well, yeah, yes. And the Sharia in American courts is an expanding incursion of Islamic law in the United States legal system. Folks, the conflicts, everyone must understand that the chaos that is being forced upon the United States, because the United States really exists as the speed bump to the conquest or the subjugation of the entire planet to a new world order. So the United States has to be destroyed before the new world order can take root. So they're hitting us from all sides, including the alien invasion, and then of course they're using our court system against us. They're taking Sharia and imposing Sharia, and most Americans are just woefully unaware of this trend that's actually taking place in Europe. You've got European countries. You've got blasphemy laws now that are being put in place, including even to a lesser extent up in Canada. We're going to see this here in America. So this is a planned takedown of our country. the erosion of our national identity, accompanied by the devastating loss of our freedoms, the rising anti-Semitism, the exploding violence being experienced here, well, across the Atlantic, and the exploding violence that will infect American society as well, is all part of the contrived takedown of our country that includes our legal system, our moral fabric, as Michael Savage, or as Dr. Savage says, borders, language, and culture. The foundation, if you, all anyone has to do is use a search engine and look for, search the exploratory memorandum from the Muslim Brotherhood. In fact, the exploratory memorandum, I spoke about this with Steve Quayle back in 2008. These were documents that were presented in the 2008 Holy Land Foundation Hamas terror funding trial. It makes it clear the settlement process that is associated with Sharia is a form of grand jihad in terms of eliminating and destroying the Western civilization from within and sabotaging us by our own hands. I hope people understand that. A prime method by which our hands can be used to destroy us is through the court system. We see this taking place over in Europe. And I could go on and deeper into this, but you see where we're coming from here. It's no accident that you've got 10,000, Joe, as you say, 10,000 being granted amnesty in this country by an agency that doesn't even have the authority to grant the amnesty. And then concurrent with that, you've got the implementation of Sharia in the United States, which is antithetical, cannot coexist with the laws of our republic. So, in the end, the weaponization of Islam, it's been a plan, a tactic that's been planned forever. I mean, we are fighting the animals, the savages. That have been groomed, trained, and imported by the globalists in power behind the people in the United States who are leading the United States. And then you've got these useful idiots, whether it be de Blasio, Bloomberg, on a city level, or those on a state or federal level, who believe in the Marxist side of things and will enjoy, say that we should celebrate diversity. But they are creating the conflict. They are creating the conflict between Sharia, for example, and U.S. federal, state, and local laws. They're creating the conflict because of the lack of assimilation with the aliens, the Muslims, into this country. They are creating the conflict with social issues, the homosexual agenda, a big one. They're creating the conflict and sustaining the conflict in all other avenues. But at the end of the day, Christianity is to be eradicated. At least Christianity as we know it. Oh, Christianity light will be there. Christianity where you can't mention the name of Jesus. That's okay. Because notice that Islam recognizes Jesus as a prophet, but not as the Savior. And the lie that will be perpetuated that we all worship the same God, it's a lie. It's a lie straight from the pits of hell.
We read the 10 points of the destruction of Christianity yesterday. Number 9 was create an interfaith movement.
Yes. You're on this, man. Go.
Well, I'll have to grab the document.
Oh, well, that's all right. But see, all of these are following this orchestra. There's a playbook out there of the globalists. And you can see it. And the playbook of the globalists is the playbook of the Luciferian globalists, is the playbook of the communists. And McCarthy was right back in the 50s. His delivery might have been a little bit questionable, if you really want to go there. But McCarthy was right.
The create an interfaith movement, number 9. Promote other faiths to be at par with Christianity. And break this thing about Christianity as being the only way to heaven. By that, Christianity will be pulled down and other faiths promoted. She being Alice Bailey, said promote the importance of man in determining his own future and destiny. Humanism. She said tell men he has the right to choose what he wants to be and can make it happen. He has the right to determine his cause. This takes God off his throne. Interfaith movements are rising everywhere in the world today. And the last one was get governments to make all these laws and get the church to endorse these changes. The church must change its doctrine and accommodate to the people by accepting these things and put them into structures and systems. Have they succeeded? Do you wonder why the governments are legislating laws contrary to the Bible and why the church is compromising the Word of God? It is the process of implementing the plan, a 50-year strategy of the New Age movement to fulfill its ultimate goal of establishing a one-world government, one-world economic, one-world religious system. The strategy in its entirety has been adopted by the United Nations, and already many of its laws are law in many nations. This deception has crept up on the unobserved on so many people. It can best be demonstrated through the well-known analogy of the frog in the pot of water. If you put a frog in a boiling pot of water, it's smart enough to know that it is in terrible danger and will immediately jump out. But if you turn the heat up very slowly, little by little, it does not notice the changes taking place and will slowly cook to death. Many people today are slowly cooking to death and don't seem to realize how far they've come and where they once were.
You know, that is so right on the money, because right now, and Paul McGuire talks about this, Steve Quayle talks about this, we talk about this, Alex Jones talks about this, Rick Wiles and Dave Hodges and on and on and on. But isn't it funny, and especially with Paul McGuire, an expert about the age of enlightenment, and we're being told today that, well, homosexuality, we're enlightened when we accept or suddenly realize that, oh, there's really, you know, no set male, female kind of, is just one example, accepting the transgender movement is a sign of being enlightened. And of course, Paul McGuire talks about enlightenment in general, but what we're seeing is the culmination, and what we're talking about is the culmination of a very evil, diabolical conspiracy against all of humanity. And everything that we're seeing, folks, and I want to stress this, every event that we're seeing take place, whether it's the brutal stabbing of an American tourist in London, where, I might add, they've got the Muslim mayor. Oh, aren't they enlightened? Or the French attacks, the real home of enlightenment. But human events like this and events like this can only make sense when we realize that disciples of Lucifer, and I mean Lucifer, are establishing this global regime dedicated to Satan. Now, it may sound bizarre, that may sound too bizarre to even be true, but don't they count on you believing that it's too bizarre to be true in order to achieve their particular ends? We're living right now in a fool's paradise. And we don't expect everyone. Many people are not going to wake up until they take away the free phones and healthcare.
Many aren't going to wake up until they have no food to eat,
right,
nowhere to put their head at night to rest, until it's too late. And that's just the sad state of the world that we're in. Like we said earlier, that frog that's in the pot with the heat being turned up little by little. We are that frog, and they are succeeding. We are definitely dying.
Yes, yes, in fact. But, you know, secret societies, where do they fall into everything? In the realm of the conspiracy, the cone of silence. They're propelling, they're facilitating the conspiracy of silence, because when you start identifying the people who perpetuate the conspiracy of silence, you uncover ties that transcend any political allegiances. And they're all globalists. They're all Luciferians. The counterculture.
That's right.
The metastatic aspect of the Luciferian thinking.
We're going to take your calls after this next segment for hour number 3. Stay tuned.
Yeah, another machete attack in the United Kingdom, you know.
And are you, another one since yesterday, well, or just yesterday's?
A 26-year-old man is in serious condition after driving himself about 5 miles to a hospital after being stabbed in the head, arm, and torso. Jeez. Of course, you're not going to hear about this. Yeah, yeah, yeah. There was a horrific attack today. And of course, the man who was reportedly attacked with a machete made a 20-minute journey to the hospital, where, I mean, he drove himself to the hospital, but they describe his attacks as non-life-threatening. But again, are we looking at this conspiracy of silence? Why are we looking at this conspiracy of silence and remaining silent? Well, I should also add, while we're taking stock in this, that Muslims set fire to a man in Waltham Abbey Gardens attack. That's right. That's right. In another, in the UK, attackers identified as being of Turkish appearance set fire to a man in the UK. Folks, Islam, it is a death cult. And those who describe Islam as a religion of peace and saying that terrorism has nothing to do with Islam are perpetuating the lie, the conspiracy of silence, in order to soften us up. We're going to be taking your calls
in hour 3.
In hour 3.
After this segment.
After
the next
segment.
Break.
That's right.
844-769-2944. 844-769-2944.
Go to Hagman and Hagman.com and the numbers
start calling after we go to the break.
That's right.
Don't tread on me, insignia.
Yes.
Could be punishable by racial harassment.
George Orwell would be blushing right now.
The don't tread on me flag? Well, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, among its other functions, decides hostile work environment harassment claims brought against federal agencies. In doing so, it applies the same legal rules that courts apply to private employers. and that the EEOC follows in deciding whether to sue private employers. The EEOC has already ruled that coworkers wearing Confederate flag t-shirts can be punishable, harassment. And, unsurprisingly, this is extending to other political speech as well.
No, no, wait a second. It's double indemnity if it's drawn in chalk on the sidewalk. All right.
You got to get the hate response teams out.
There you
go. To emotionally put back together these triggered snowflake generation peons.
Yep.
On January 8th, 2014, complainant filed a formal complaint in which he alleged that the agency subjected him to discrimination on the basis of race, African American, and in reprisal for prior EEO activity when, starting in the fall of 2003, a coworker repeatedly wore a cap to work. What was written on the cap? The Gadsden flag.
The Gadsden flag, yeah,
which
the Gadsden
a coiled rattlesnake in the phrase
yep.
"Don't tread on me."
Yep.
The complainant found the cap to be racially offensive to African Americans because it was designed by Christopher Gadsden, a slave trader and owner of slaves.
Yeah. Yeah.
Complainant also alleged he complained about the cap to management. However, management assured him the employee would not continue to wear the offensive cap.
Now,
anyway,
again, is this a sign of tolerance or is this a plea for tolerance? No, it's a sign of intolerance here.
Yeah.
And the most intolerant people that walk among us are those who claim to be the most tolerant. The most intolerant people who walk among us are those who are the progressive left, Bernie Sanders, Hillary Clinton followers, for the most part. And the Gadsden flag, the "Don't Tread on Me" slogan, the Confederate flag, folks, all of these are following the Ten Commandments and the Bible, and these are all going to be wiped out.
Now, I'm not going to go on to read about this case in particular, but I'm going to get into a little bit of the commentary from the article in the Washington Post. They talk about the different rules that all employers, both public or private, must follow.
Oh, we have to put them up here at the Hagman and Hagman studio.
Wait a second. Get the EEOC on the phone. Eric's Hillary for prison cap is offending and triggering me.
I
can't finish.
Get that chalk. Drop the chalk. Stand back. Drop the chalk, Eric. Come on now.
No, listen to this, though. Imagine you are a reasonable employer. You don't want to restrict an employee's speech any more than is necessary. But
right.
You also don't want to face the risk of a legal liability for allowing speech that the government might label harassing. An employee comes to you complaining that a coworker wearing a "Don't Tread on Me" cap or having an "All Lives Matter" bumper sticker on their car in the employee lot,
right,
constitutes legally actionable hostile environment harassment.
This is ridiculous beyond anything that you can, because this will extend. Okay, if you have now you wear a Cinco de Mayo t-shirt or even an Al Qaeda or an ISIS flag. Hey, it's okay. But don't you dare wear an American flag, you know, lapel pin in the midst of a Cinco de Mayo parade or at a, it's just ridiculous. But see, people are, and this is where people, including Christians, must take a stand, because we have to fight this and we can win on the numbers. We have to fight this at the local level. And
absolutely.
We have to say, we're not going to stand for this. You're not going to make me. For example, you walk into a stadium wearing a Gadsden flag on your shirt, you know, shirt with the "Don't Tread on Me." Don't tell me to flip it over.
The flag is just where it starts. As you said, the chalkings. They give an example here of someone wearing a Trump Pence 2016 shirt in the workplace or displaying the bumper sticker on the car.
Yep,
they
yep,
say
yep,
that
yep,
this, yep. Even though there is no racial or religious slurs And it does not express any anti-Muslim or Hispanic views, though a person could perceive the co-worker's
it's
bumper sticker or support.
Right, it's perception.
Exactly. As racial or religious hostility.
Right.
Or insensitivity of racial or religious beliefs. So where does this line of, you know, they're putting this in the context of an employer-employee relationship, but where does the political correctness line end and begin? Where does the free speech and constitution come in here?
Well, I mean, it's all about allowed,
free speech. Are people going to be punished for supporting a political candidate aside from 501c3s? I mean, really, can you be charged with harassment or racial insensitivity for having a Trump Pence 2016 bumper sticker?
Well,
and if so, this goes both ways.
That's right. It does. But how many people are going to say, well, that Hillary bumper sticker offends me? Because they're more reasonable than that. Of course, they under.
No, but it offends me now.
I mean, well,
the idea doesn't offend me. It baffles my mind that anybody with an ounce or one brain cell that works could even entertain the idea of voting for a criminal, you know.
Hillary should be in prison.
She should be arrested for treason. She should be put in prison. Yes. She is the worst type of criminal, because not only does she commit the crimes, but she laughs in the victims' faces and lies about it.
Well, exactly.
Another Benghazi parent has come out.
Yes.
And we talked about this.
Yes.
And accused Hillary Clinton of, and Obama, of using their son's, Tyrone Woods', death for photo ops. And the father of Tyrone Woods kept a diary of everything that was said to him by Hillary Clinton. And he has come out and said that he was lied to. The diary entry from Benghazi victim's dad. I gave Hillary a hug. This is the story from Fox News. And I don't know what's up with the internet. I don't know if it's my
computer. That's fine. But the bottom line with this
is, he kept track of what was said to him by Hillary Clinton.
She has lied consistently. And the people, for example, the people who attempted to shape the news, MSNBC, right through Fox. And I was on the phone,
even
by the
local
way.
Our local radio station, our Fox affiliate here, AM 1400,
shaping public opinion wherever we go.
But yeah, right.
But I just want to tell people that I was privy to conversations with Fox News, with the people that you see, you know, behind the camera, and that they would not report on the Benghazi incident back in right after it happened.
Out of fear of losing their job.
Well, that, out of fear of losing their job, there were threats made, and there was also this, well, we just can't run with this story right now because the facts aren't all in. Well, yeah, they were. You're just not listening to the proper people. And I'm not talking about me. I'm talking about people who know what the deal was. But, okay, some other very important information before we get too far into the program. Bill Clinton, he got millions of dollars from the world's biggest Sharia law education firm. I don't know how many people know this. This appeared in the Daily Caller, but Bill Clinton collected $5.6 million in fees from GEMS, GEMS Education. That's a Dubai-based company that teaches Sharia law through its network of more than 100 schools in the Middle East, Asia, and Africa. And the company's finances adhere to Sharia finance, which includes giving zakat. It's a religious tax of which 1/8 of the proceeds is dedicated to funding Islamic Jihad. Now, this is Bill Clinton and the Clinton Foundation. The Bubba, okay, served as honorary chairman for GEMS Education from 2011 to 2014. Now, just check his federal income taxes he filed. The 2016 Democratic presidential nominee Hillary Clinton, her filings show Yeah, they got this money, $5.6 million from a Dubai-based company that promotes exports, and well, it's the world's biggest fishery law education firm. That's extremely important. Another thing I want to mention, too, we had Jack Cashel on last month in studio, TWA Flight 800. There was an article today in, I believe it was on the American Thinker. I'm not 100% sure, but I'm going to be coming out with something here in the next 24 hours. Folks, there are, since our broadcast, now I'm not going to say necessarily because of our broadcast, but since our broadcast with Jack Cashel, there have been more, he has been getting more leads into the cover up, the conspiracy behind TWA 800 than ever before. So, if you're listening to me, if you're listening to this program, and you have any information, contact Jack Cashel through his website, cashel.com. I want to say that there is a lot of new information, and the information that's coming are coming from, is coming from insiders, government insiders. He did put a call out to an FBI agent, one in particular, and perhaps that FBI agent is listening. I do know that FBI agent, former FBI agent, listened when Jack Cashel was in studio. And if he's listening now, I plead, contact Jack Cashel. But anyone within the government apparatus, and I know there are people listening to this broadcast within the government, contact Jack Cashel. Because what happened on that day in July in 1996, TWA Flight 800, led the way, paved the way for 9/11, paved the way for the Islamic terror through the conspiracy of silence. Please, folks, if you have information about this, contact Jack Cashel. And I will say, Jack Cashel is, having met him, spoke with him, talked with him, having read his book, and if you haven't gotten it yet, I highly recommend it. Please, if you have any information, contact Jack Cashel through his website. One more thing. And Joe, we talked about this earlier, and I think it's important to spend the rest of this segment on this.
Well, I got something too, but go ahead.
Okay, but I really believe this to be the case. Folks, we are watching the globalists set up Donald Trump. We're watching a narrative being created that will force Trump out of the nomination, damage him.
I don't think they can force him.
Well, okay.
They can try.
They can try. They could damage his chances. They could
they've done as much as, I mean, damaging his chances is what the media is, and all left, right, independent, most independent, have been doing.
Well,
by spreading rumors, by
right.
saying, you know, oh, how he's gotten so off track, and oh, Clinton takes a 9-point poll lead. We talked about this a little bit yesterday. If you actually go to some of those polls and look at the demographics and break it down into, other ways that the websites allow you to, Trump actually has so much more support. He actually raised 20-some million dollars more than Hillary Clinton last month, and we're talking about from small donations, where Hillary Clinton donations came from super PACs. So,
oh, yeah.
And I was just looking at some numbers. It was like $82 million Trump raised in the month of July, and if the average donation was $10, we'll say that's $8.2 million people
but,
right
but,
there.
But you
see the stadiums filled up for Trump. You see
yes.
the fire marshals keeping out.
And that's banana republic behavior, by the way.
Absolutely. And you see this, like we talked about earlier, Giuliani says Newt Gingrich started Trump intervention talk. Former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani claims former U.S. House Speaker Newt Gingrich is behind talk of an intervention to get Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump back on track. So, first of all, I find the word intervention completely out of line, Giuliani said on the Fox Business Morning with Maria show. According to The Hill, that word, I think, honestly, I love him dearly, but I think that word was used by Newt in a memo that got around. Giuliani called the intervention a ridiculous word to use in the current circumstances with respect to the Trump campaign. An intervention is for a drug addict, and it's for someone who's an alcoholic. I've had to do it with people at times, he said. There's nothing wrong with them. If that's the case, Donald Trump doesn't drink or smoke, by the way. We don't have that problem. According to the former presidential candidate, he meets with Trump often to discuss issues and make suggestions.
Well, I mean, the bigger issue here,
it's not different from any campaign I have ever seen, including my own.
But I think the bigger issue, though, when we look at this, is the fact that the insiders, the Republican insiders, okay, if you want to still use that term, are attempting to sabotage his campaign. They're actively seeking his replacement. They are looking for reasons to knock him out of that position. Now, regardless of what you might think of Trump, this kind of activity is absolutely, it shows to me the desperation of the globalist Luciferian people who are behind the One World, New World Order agenda, because Trump represents a threat. But see, taking out the man, will that take out the movement? That's the question. Or will the taking out the man galvanize the movement to such an extent that a civil war would rage? And I do feel that to be the case. Folks, I do believe that we're looking at a civil war. And I draw your attention back to 2012 when my DH insider said, look, they are attempting to create a civil war, the conditions for a civil war. And people laughed and said, oh, see, this didn't come true. Well, hey, Obama, in the face of that, Obama handily was reelected. So perhaps the timing was off. But was the objective off?
No, it wasn't.
So,
and we see today in the current state of the media, and even going back to the 10-point plan of Alice Bailey, the New World Order's plan for the destruction of Christianity, use media to promote and change mindset. Now let's apply this to what we see today with Donald Trump. She goes on to say, the greatest channel you need to use to change human attitude is media. Use press, radio, TV, cinema. All these, you can see how successful they've been in implementing their plan over 65 years via these media and advertising agencies. But who controls the media?
Well, so you much get the money, six, right?
Yeah. So much money is pumped into these advertising of spreading of all kinds of pornographic and other materials, false information, mm-hmm. lies.
Mm-hmm.
This really is what, you know, where the brainwashing begins. And I have a book here, Brainwashing, The Science of Thought Control. And I just was looking at the title of the book today, and you think brainwashing. When something's dirty, you wash it. And what they're trying to do is clear your brain of beliefs and put other beliefs that they have into your mind. But listen to this. This is a paragraph out of this book written by Kathleen Taylor. When talking about valuable beliefs versus less valuable beliefs, and they say in changing a belief, if the belief under threat is a strongly held one, the outcome may be very different. Strong beliefs are strong because they have been reinforced on many occasions, or by very intense stimuli, or both. They tend to be deeply embedded in the cognitive landscape, in a web of connections with other beliefs. A devout believer in God does not hold this conviction in isolation from all other beliefs. Rather, it provides emotional bedrock for much of its existence. Such beliefs can be extremely hard to change. In extreme cases, believers may actively reject reality if it forces change upon them, retreating into psychosis, into new worlds woven from dreams. The analogy of a web is an appropriate one here. Discarding a weak belief is like cutting a thread at the edge of the web. It makes little or no difference to the body of the web itself. Changing a strong belief is like cutting one of the main supporting strains. The entire structure of the web may be changed or even destroyed.
So in the larger sense, what are you saying here? Because people might hear that and say, well, what does all that mean? I mean,
what they're saying is for the strongest beliefs that people have, it will take much more to change those beliefs.
And I do believe that.
But the beliefs that aren't, like the like our belief in Jesus, and I'll use just my belief in Jesus.
Right.
There's nothing anybody can show me, nothing that can happen in this world, whether it's seen or heard, that would take their belief away. Even though they'll try. And they will try. Even as the Bible says, you know, there will be false messiahs. They will perform miracles and false wonders.
Yep.
Even if it was possible to deceive even the very elect. But when it comes to other beliefs, less tightly held on to, like the belief of a candidate or a belief in an ideology, a political ideology, those are easier to break and manipulate. So you start with the smaller beliefs and work your way to the bigger ones from the smaller ones. For an example, if you want to change a person's belief in religion, you're not going to just be able to come at them and say this isn't deeply true.
It's like a frog in the pot. Right.
It's going to have to be a slow, subtle process.
Well, right. I mean, and I get all that. And I think people are aware of that. But so we're seeing this on a larger scale here to take place all across the West. And even to some extent within the terrorist circles, terrorism circles, because you've got this ideological, ingraining this ideological, mindset or, yeah, I mean, I get it. I think it's pretty clear. Now, you know,
Coming up to the break.
Yeah. Go ahead.
We're taking calls on the other side, 844-769-2944.
And in case you missed it, we're going to be seeing more and more of these headlines. There was a guy in Detroit. I don't even know how to pronounce this guy's name. He changed it to I think it's a Durham Bin Malcolm, I don't know, whatever his name is, Muhammad. Anyway, look, folks, a Detroit man was caught in a sting. There was by undercover federal agents, FBI investigations, counterterrorism investigators, 16-month undercover investigation, caught with grenades, explosives, and an assortment of other weapons. But the complaint said that, look, this guy was going to launch an attack last month and was stopped by federal agents. But here's the important issue. Bottom line, come into America, come into a city, you're going to see it just like France, Germany, UK.